The views expressed on the Buckmaster Radio program are not necessarily the views of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, or its sponsors.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Buckmaster Show. It is Monday, August 27th, 2018. I'm Dan Scheer, editor of the Green Valley News and the Sahuarita Sun, sitting in for Bill, who's out this week enjoying much cooler weather up in Alaska. And if you follow Bill's Facebook page, you'll see that he really lucked out. He got there on one of the rare days this summer when visitors are actually able to see Denali. So good on him. Sounds like it's going to be a great trip. Our best to you, Bill. You always deserve the break. The show comes to you live Monday through Friday, noon to 1 p.m. on KVOI, 10:30 a.m., or you can catch the live stream at buckmastershow.com and kvoi.com. You can find archives of past shows at buckmastershow.com also. We start off the week with the Monday political face-off. We have lots to talk about because it is the day before the primary election. Today, we are welcoming John Munger and Jeff Rogers. After the break at 12:30, we're going to be talking to Patty O'Berry. She is the CEO of Hands of a Friend, which runs a domestic violence shelter south of Tucson. And part of that discussion is going to focus on the Me Too movement, and you're not going to want to miss that. As always, you are invited to join the discussion. Please call us on the Buckmaster Show live line at 790-2040. It is time for our Monday political face-off. We're joined by John Munger. He's former president of the Arizona Board of Regents and a Tucson attorney. And Jeff Rogers, former Pima County chair of the Democratic Party and also an attorney. The Monday political face-off is presented by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing. Family-owned and run since 1985, Moe's specializes in custom frame mirrors, wall art, picture framing, and hanging services and systems. They have everything, and they do it right. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing at Fort Lowell and Dodge and at moesgallery.com. And, of course, you can find them on Facebook. Jeff and John, hope you guys had a great weekend.
Great weekend. How about you?
Oh, long one.
You know, good. You know,
newspaper people leading up to any type of vote on a Tuesday, you know, you're just busy the whole weekend, just making sure you don't miss anything. And then, of course, we had the death of Senator McCain this weekend, and that was keeping all of us hopping also. So, yeah. Jeff, how are you doing?
Doing well. Had a nice weekend. Got a little horseback riding in.
Oh, very good. On Saturday, we, as I mentioned, lost a national icon in Arizona Senator John McCain. John, your thoughts on Senator McCain and his passing?
Well, I knew John very well. In fact, when John ran for the U.S. Senate, I had known him as a congressman, and he asked me to introduce him to Tucson, which he had no connections in. And so I was his first introduction into Tucson, spent a couple of days with him. John was a great guy. He was a scamp, a maverick. He had a great sense of humor. I didn't agree, frankly, with John on a lot of political issues, but I did enjoy his ability to spoof himself, and he was always making cracks. Great guy, very nice person. And I do think that not only was he a war hero, but I think he was thoroughly dedicated to this country. He believed he was an American through and through. He believed in American exceptionalism, and he fought for what he believed in. Whether you agreed with him all the time or not, he was the kind of person that we need more of to occupy our Senate in the United States.
Well, he certainly had a life of service. And Jeff, I'm not going to say that the Democrats warmed up to him over the last, you know, just a few years, but certainly there was a sense that he was a rarity in today's politics, which is a statesman. Overall assessment of John McCain's legacy from a Democrat's point of view?
Well, I will miss him. I admired him. I didn't agree with him very often. Maybe disagreed with him probably 85% of the time, but I admired him greatly. He was just such a polite, generous, decent human being. And, you know, you contrast that with the person we have in the White House now who can't mention anyone's name without calling him a name first, such as lying Ted Cruz, or, you know, Crooked Hillary. He's got a nasty nickname for everybody. John McCain was not that way at all. I would ask some of the people listening here to go back and Google this Al Smith dinner from 2008 where McCain gave us, they're supposed to tell a bunch of jokes, make fun of each other, make fun of themselves, and he did a remarkable job of that. But he ended his speech talking about how much he admired then-Senator Barack Obama. And he said, I'm going to beat him, and I differ with him on many of the issues. But that was the kind of man he was. And I'm also reminded of the clip that we're seeing played quite a bit on television of the campaign stop in 2008 where a woman comes out of the crowd, a woman sort of reminiscent of what we now know are Trump supporters, and talks about Barack Obama being an Arab and how afraid of him she was. And he says, no, 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 and corrects her and says he's a great American and we just differ on the issues. And that's the kind of statesman that I think we need more of in both parties. A more gentlemanly discussion of the issues and sometimes trying to reach across the aisle and get some bipartisanship, which we haven't seen much of for a long, long time.
Well, Jeff, to stick with you, it was reported Sunday that President Trump opted against an official White House statement on Senator McCain's death, instead tweeting about it. He also had lowered the flag at the White House for a short time, but then it has already been raised back up, whereas the flags across the country have not been. And this isn't going over very well.
Well, it shouldn't go over very well. It's petty, and it's, it says a lot about President Trump, I mean, frankly. But, you know, he probably remembers well one of the last statements that John McCain said about him when he talked about the Helsinki conference, saying it was one of the most disgraceful performances by an American president in memory. The damage inflicted by President Trump's naivete, egotism, false equivalence, sympathy for autocrats is difficult to calculate. Flattery secures his friendship, criticism his enmity. I think that's probably still churning in Trump's gut right now, and that's why he's acting the way he is.
John, is this a proper response from a president when somebody of McCain's stature dies?
Well, I would have preferred that we keep the flag lowered at half-mast for several days or a week. There was clearly no love lost between President Trump and Senator McCain. Senator McCain said a lot of very nasty things against President Trump. And President Trump doesn't take kindly to that. So it's not what I would have preferred or what I would have done, but it's not a big issue in my opinion.
But isn't there a time to push all of that aside and recognize really what was decades and decades of public service on the part of John McCain?
Well, sure. That's why I would have kept the flag at half mast.
But you said it didn't bother you.
It doesn't bother me that much. It's not that big of an issue. I mean, there are things to worry about in this world. That isn't one of them.
Well, I think we expect our president to be a bigger man than that.
Okay. Next steps. Funeral will be held soon, and then Governor Ducey has said that he, at that point, and not until that point, will he appoint somebody to serve until 2020, and then the seat will, of course, be decided by the voters. Then he has to appoint a Republican. And a few names have been bandied about. Here's the Washington Post's short list. McCain's wife, Cindy, Ducey's chief of staff, Kirk Adams, state treasurer, Eileen Klein, former Congressman John Shadegg, and former U.S. Senator John Kyle. John, what do you think?
Well, I don't think it will be Cindy McCain, and I don't think it will be John Kyle. If I had to bet, I'd bet on Kirk Adams. Kirk Adams is a former president of the state Senate. He's a really good person. He is a true conservative. And I think that Governor Ducey has a great deal of confidence in Kirk for a lot of reasons. Congressman Shadegg is a great guy, and I think he'd be terrific. Eileen Klein, I think, is a very fine lady. I don't know that she's conservative enough, but I don't know she's not. I just believe it will be Kirk Adams.
Wasn't Klein on the Board of Regents as well?
She was.
President of it for a short time?
She was both on the board and president of the administration. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
At this point, is it out of the question to consider Martha McSally?
Oh, no, I don't think so. But that would mean that we don't have anybody running in the Senate campaign against Kyrsten Sinema. I think the governor will let Martha McSally do her thing. I think she will win the primary. And I think she's coming on strong against Kyrsten Sinema, so I don't think it'll be Martha. She'd be a fine appointment. I just don't think it'll be her.
A couple of weeks ago, on this show, you expressed maybe a little bit of doubt about whether Martha McSally could pull it off in November. And I believe at the time she was 4 percentage points down versus Sinema, if I'm recalling
that's right.
accurately. And I don't know if we have any more recent polling than that, but this would get her in there. But you're right, it might put the Flake's seat at risk.
Well, it would. I just don't think it's the move that Governor Ducey will take. And I do think that Martha was only 4 points behind Kyrsten Sinema, having not campaigned against Kyrsten Sinema at that time. Now she's opened up and she's coming after Kyrsten Sinema. I think, in my opinion, I think if Martha McSally was holding it at 4% behind Kyrsten Sinema, without having gone after Kyrsten Sinema, while Kyrsten Sinema, on the other hand, was spending a lot of money going after Martha McSally already, I think that Martha can win that race.
Okay, we're going to continue this topic on the other side of the break. We're going to take a quick break right now. Remember, the political face-off is brought to you by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing at Fort Lowell and Dodge. And don't forget, Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle. Mona's is on the northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. Owners Steve and Sherry are experts in European baked goods, spreads, pastries, cakes, and brownies are even open for lunch. Mona's Danish Bakery, northeastern corner of Swan and Sunrise. You can find a link to them at buckmastershow.com. We'll be right back.
In case you haven't heard, a recent state performance audit says the Regional Transportation Authority is meeting performance and budget expectations on voter-approved RTA plan delivery. Now in its 12th year of plan implementation, the RTA is committed to delivering the remaining projects with the community's support to improve our regional transportation system. Working together for a better future, visit rtamobility.com. Vero Amore is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamore.com.
Did you know that you can check out complete digital editions of popular magazines with your Pima County Public Library card? From Arizona Highways to Yoga Journal and everything in between, the library is your source for entertainment. Visit library.pima.gov and browse the e-library to start checking out your favorite magazines today. That's library.pima.gov.
As a small business owner, I know the importance of a certified public accountant you can trust. That's why I recommend my CPA, Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates, proud sponsors of the Buckmaster Show. Located at 2919 East Broadway and on the web at flowersrieger.com or follow the live link on buckmastershow.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
If you're searching for that special one-of-a-kind item, may I suggest Adobe House Antiques. It has a vast collection and variety of antiques, lighting, and fine art. In addition to the interior space, a large outdoor location offers an extensive collection of vintage patio furniture, exterior lighting, and ironwork. Come see Penny at 2700 North Campbell, 325-9439, or on the web at adobehouseantiques.com. This is Bill Buckmaster. The Buckmaster Show features Arizona newsmakers and more than two dozen Buckmaster Show contributors. Everything from foreign affairs to the arts is on the table and open for discussion, and of course, your calls from one end of Southern Arizona to the other. Buckmaster, weekdays, noon to 1 on AM 1030, KVOI, Tucson's Voice.
Welcome back to the Monday Political Face-Off, presented by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing. That's moesgallery.com, and of course you can find them on Facebook. I'm Dan Scheer, editor of the Green Valley News and the Sauditta Sun, sitting in for a vacationing Bill Buckmaster. You've caught us in the middle of the Monday Political Face-Off with Jeff Rogers and John Munger. And I want to go back to Martha McSally. John, do you expect that Martha McSally will... She has in her recent campaigning really moved much closer to the president and trying to appeal to people who would support him. Do you expect her to move back a bit center if she prevails on Tuesday in the primary?
I don't really think so. I don't think she's that far out either way. I think she's going to campaign based upon who she is and what she believes. She's clearly an advocate for strong national defense. I think that she's been campaigning pretty much on based on who she is. So she may move a little bit, but I don't think so.
Well, I think she better. let's give a good example here. Before this seat opened up, she was a co-sponsor, as were many other Republicans, of a more moderate immigration bill. And the minute this seat opened up, she pulled herself off as a sponsor to that and instead became a co-sponsor to a much, much stricter, much more conservative bill. And so she changed that virtually overnight. And this primary has been about who loves Trump the most, and she's embraced him a great deal. And I think it's going to be hard for her to move to the center, but if I were telling her what to do, I would tell her to definitely do that, because the Republicans don't have anyone else to vote for, and you're now going to have to start appealing to that great middle swath of independents that lean one way or the other, and she's going to need a substantial number of those. So I would fully expect her to try to moderate her position on some things between now and the November election.
I don't think she's going to moderate her position at all on the border. She's been very strong on the border, and I don't expect her to moderate that position at all. I don't know where she's going to moderate. She can't moderate and shouldn't moderate on national defense. She shouldn't moderate on the border. She wins on both of those issues. I don't think she should moderate on the new forms of health insurance. I don't know where she'd moderate.
We had a Congressional District 2 forum down in Green Valley a few months ago, and at the end of it, they allowed, this was put on by the Green Valley Republican Party. Joe Arpaio happened to be there. They allowed him to speak. And somebody in the crowd, and actually it was an official with the Green Valley Republican Club, stood up and said, you know what, we want you to pull out of the race. We like Kelly Ward, and you're going to screw things up. Has Joe Arpaio screwed things up for Kelly Ward?
Oh, I think he has. I think he has. I think that Kelly Ward would probably be ahead if it weren't for Joe Arpaio. And I think that's the case, and I think that's one reason why Martha McSally cannot change her position too much. She needs not only her votes that she's going to get in the primary, but she needs Kelly Ward's votes, and she needs Joe Arpaio's votes.
Well, John, how do these things work behind the scenes? At some point, did not anybody tap Joe Arpaio on the shoulder and say, hey, buddy, it's over?
You know, that isn't the way the Republican Party works anymore. It used to work that way, and we don't interfere with primaries. The party doesn't. And we just stay out of the primaries. Years ago, the Republican Party got itself in a bind by doing just that type of thing. We believe in primaries. We believe in letting people vote. And we think that that's good for the party. Instead of running primary campaigns from the top, we let people hash it out. Now, that distinguishes the party's job. On the one hand, you got to make sure you have a candidate. On the other hand, once you have a candidate, you get out of the picture. And that's not the way the Democratic Party runs. The Democratic Party brings in national money from the party to support local candidates, and I think Jeff would be the first to tell you that's causing some problems in the Democratic Party now, because the Democratic National Party is taking positions on candidates in a way that the Republican National Party certainly isn't. So the Democrats have their way of running it from the top. We let it be hashed out at the ballot.
Jeff, is the Republican Party as pure as John is portraying it? And why do the Democrats jump in and throw money behind a candidate during a primary?
I think John is overstating it to some degree. But the Democratic Party has made mistakes like this in the past. We didn't do it on a local level when I was the chairman of the party. I would recruit candidates and encourage people to run, but I didn't put the party's position wherewithal behind any one single candidate.
Which I agree with.
Yeah, and I think that's appropriate. And let me give you a good example of what happens. Donald Trump happens. That's what happened. You know, the DCCC and the DNC put their weight behind Hillary Clinton, and the perception was that they hand-selected Hillary Clinton and that they pushed her over the top. I think she would have won nonetheless, but that perception kept a lot of Bernie voters from voting at all for president, and it kept a lot of them, it caused a lot of them to vote for third-party candidates instead. And so, you know, that's the kind of results you can see. And we risk that same problem in CD2 with the Matt Hines and Kirkpatrick problem. Not only are they negatively affecting each other, and the person who comes out of that's going to be mortally wounded, but in addition to that, you know, there will be a perception amongst all of the other candidates that the DNC and DCCC, the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, put their thumb on the scale for Ann Kirkpatrick. And while I like Ann personally and like all the candidates that are running, I think that could sow some dissension that could haunt us in November.
Felicia Rodellini, who's the head of the Arizona Democrats, was in Green Valley a couple weeks ago, and she was talking about this issue because a couple of people in the crowd are not happy that they feel like the national level Democrats are deciding the local candidates. This is one of those races that you're talking about, and she took a lot of flack for that. And then she brought up the idea of an earlier primary, because right now with a late August primary, the turnaround between that point and when early ballots are sent out is, you know, 5 or 6 weeks, and it's very difficult for a candidate to get out there. And she said this is why they're getting behind him. An earlier primary, Jeff, is that the answer, and what would it take to get there?
Well, it's going to take a drastic changes in Arizona law. For instance, you know, one of the problems legislators have is they're legally forbidden from raising money during the legislature while it's in session. And we've seen in the past, not recently, but we've seen in the past, some deadlocked sessions go into late June. And, you know, that would be a problem if you had, like many other places, like Indiana, where I'm originally from, has May primaries. I've always been in favor of a spring primary, but it's going to take some changes in Arizona law to get that done, because the existing state legislatures, they want, you know, they're not hardly going to pass a law that's going to harm themselves and put their incumbency at risk. So, you know, I would be definitely in favor of that. And then you have a longer period of time to look at the party's candidates and compare them instead of this short sprint that you have of 4 or 5 weeks before the early ballots drop.
John, would you support an earlier primary?
Well, I see the problems exactly as Jeff sees them. Putting everything else aside and the issue of the ability or lack of ability of legislators to raise money and to campaign during the legislative session, and a lot of those candidates are going to be candidates for federal offices as well, you just can't, under current law, put the primary back in May. which would be the likely date. So we're pretty well stuck with what we have. It puts a burden on people to make up their mind, but they have the rest of August, they have September, they have October. I draw some flack from friends of mine in France and other countries who say, we limit our campaign to 30 days. And we're sitting here saying that 70 days isn't enough. And they're limiting their campaigns to 30 days over there. I think we have enough time to run an election.
Can you only imagine how many commercials would be on the air if we were limited to 30 days?
Well, I don't know that we can run anymore. okay. I don't think there's any more airtime.
Okay, I think that is going to wrap up the Monday Political Face-Off. My thanks to John and Jeff. We hope you both have a great week. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is proud to present the Political Face-Off. Moe's at Fort Lowell and Dodge and at moesgallery.com and on Facebook. When we return, we're going to be joined by Patty O'Berry. She oversees a domestic violence shelter in the Green Valley Sahuarita area. We'll be right back.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. This is Bill Buckmaster. I'm passionate about travel, visiting over 100 countries in all 50 states. And when I'm ready to take off, I fly from Tucson International Airport. With 9 airlines flying nonstop to 22 destinations and easy one-stop connections, I can get virtually anywhere in the world. It's close by, convenient with competitive airfares, and there's no long drive coming back home after a long trip. Travel smart and fly Tucson. Check out flytucson.com.
Hey, it's Matt Russell from The Buckmaster Show.
And this is Ryan Hansen from Bon Voyage Travel.
I am so pumped to be partnering with Bon Voyage on my next culinary and cocktail cruise.
This is definitely a cruise for foodies as you experience the Mediterranean on celebrity cruises.
And the private excursions that your team has arranged for us? I mean, come on, an ouzo distillery tour in Greece? A food and wine day on Malta?
We'll handle everything, so all you and your guests need to do is eat, drink, and be happy.
Go to bvtravel.com/Matt Russell to learn more.
This is Bill Buckmaster. Green Things has been the place for all things green for the Buckmaster household for many years. From 2-inch succulents to 10-foot tall palms and desert trees, Green Things has it all on 13 acres and 33 greenhouses full of plants, pottery, and gardening supplies. Visit Green Things at 3384 East River Road by the Rito Riverwalk and on the web at greenthingsaz.com.
Hi, it's Suzanne Miller from your Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona, here to remind you to start with trust and look for the BBB accredited seal when searching for a product or service. Did you know you can request a quote directly from any of our accredited businesses? With over 3,000 accredited businesses in Southern Arizona, you will find a business you can trust. Whether you need a product or service from one company or an entire industry, go to tucson.bbb.org and start your search today.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine and a full bar. Enjoy delicious soups, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, happy hour, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley.
Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show. I'm Dan Shear, sitting in for Bill. This portion of the Buckmaster Show is presented by Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico, just 3 hours east of Tucson. There's a lot to do in Silver City and Grant County, such as visiting the world-famous Cliff Dwellings National Monument. For a complete listing of the many things to do, great places to stay, visit southwestnewmexico.org. As we head into our second half of our hour, I am in... inviting Patty O'Berry from down south to join us. Patty, you've been on the show before. Thank you for coming back.
I have. Thank you for having me back.
Well, you do important work, and it is always important to remind people of what's going on out there and to be honest about it. You've got great stats, great thoughts on it. You are the CEO and founder of Hands of a Friend, which is serves women who are victims of domestic violence, women and families, and you operate Genesis House, which is a domestic violence shelter south of Tucson. So not easy work, and you did this yourself.
I did. I was political, having just listened to John Munger. I know John Munger, and before I did this, I was the legislative district chairman for Legislative District 30, and that covered Pima, Santa Cruz, and parts of Cochise counties. And, you know, I probably would have been a state senator by now, but I decided anyone could do the work I did in politics, but no one that I knew would want to do this work with domestic violence victims.
Well, give us a sense of how it happened, how long it's been around, and why it's important.
Domestic violence has been around since caveman era, but in truth, I grew up in domestic violence and then married a high school sweetheart who turned out not to be so sweet in about 3 weeks, but it took me 17 years to get out. Having grown up in domestic violence, that's the way you view things, and you don't realize you're in that situation. You don't find a way out. Your mother didn't take a way out, or your father, whichever was the offender. And consequently, you don't know how to get out either. I founded Genesis House Shelter, which actually covers Sawaty to Green Valley area, but it also serves southern Tucson to Nogales, including the tribal nation. And any high lethality risk cases anywhere in the United States or beyond. We've actually had people from Delhi, India, and Venezuela, and England in shelter. We serve about a thousand per year, both inside and outside of shelter. We have those that stay with us in shelter, and then we have those in the community that we serve that are able to maintain their own residence after the abuse was discovered. The statistic that I find growing the greatest is in the past 3 years, the highest percentage increase age-wise are women 65 and above. And because of that, this last year, we added 1,200 square feet to the house. I'm thrilled to say I am a shameless, relentless beggar. And so I raised every penny of that money. And the day the last nail went in the house, that entire build was paid for in full. So that was a huge thing for me and something I vowed I would get done. And praise God, thanks to him, I got it done. October's Domestic Violence Awareness Month. Want everybody to know that. And we would love to see our listening audience at our Black and Blue No More dinner dance. That's going to be at the American Legion 66, number 66. That's the one in Green Valley on Duval Main Road. But we've got many other events coming up. If you have a minute at the end here, I'll be glad to talk about those.
We'll absolutely get to those. And the expansion was a big deal over this past year for you, but that's not all that's been happening out at the shelter. What else are you doing to kind of get the word out on the need and for people who think that their lives perhaps haven't been touched by domestic violence, they don't have friends who are victims or whatever? I mean, this is really not true.
Well, you know, the sad part is I speak all over the community. In fact, all over the state of Arizona, I have spoken on domestic violence issues. I used to sit on the Domestic Relations Commission for the state of Arizona, and at one time, for about 5 years, chaired the Arizona State Sexual Assault Network, which is another thing. Our shelter is not just domestic violence. It's for domestic violence, sexual assault, and human trafficking victims. And we don't just serve female victims and their children. We also serve male victims in the exact same manner we would serve the female victim. We just house them in an alternative location. I find it strange because all the speaking I do all over the state, I'll always have those in the audience who say, well, this doesn't really have anything to do with me. I don't know a victim of abuse. I said, you may very well be sitting right next to one. It may be the person who's sitting behind you in church. It may be your hairdresser. It may be the bagger who's bagging your groceries at Safeway. You do know someone involved in domestic violence. I can promise you that.
And that's because there's still a stigma attached to it. I mean, what's interesting is we're having these national discussions about social media and how everybody makes their lives seem so much more wonderful on social media with the selfies and we went to this place and we went to this restaurant and everything. And it just kind of really kind of piles on to the fact that we don't want people to know we have problems.
No, we don't. And believe it or not, domestic violence is treated kind of the way incest has always been treated. It's the dirty little secret that nobody wants to talk about. The woman or the child who's being assaulted in an incestuous assault plant this smile on their face as though everything is fine. Nothing's going on in my house. Everything's good in my house. And it's far from the truth. You know, for those of you who think domestic violence does not have anything to do with you, I'm going to promise you this. Every one of you have a bank account. Every one of you have a wallet. Most of you have investments. You have a home you love. Well, I'm going to tell you, it is affecting you financially. If for no other reason that you're thinking about, oh, domestic violence doesn't affect me, you need to think about this. I want to give you a few statistics that are going to shock you. There are 8 million paid days of work are missed each year in the United States alone due to domestic violence. Do you know what that's the equivalent of? It is the equivalent of 32,000 full-time paid jobs. Imagine that. 8 million paid days of work. That is costing you, the taxpayer, money. It costs, just for intimate partner violence, $5.8 billion is spent each year. 4.1 of that $5.8 billion is for direct medical and mental health services for victims of domestic violence. That's money out of your pocketbook. That's money out of your savings account. That's money you are paying in taxes. $1.7 plus billion is lost in business productivity because of the abusers who may lose work to jail time or the abused who lost work hours due to medical reasons for the abuse. And 5.6 million days of household productivity. That's the non-paid wife, mother, homemaker who's lost the ability to do the work because of the violence. Maybe he broke her arm, he broke her leg, he hospitalized her. So even the work around the house that he feels inconsequential, even that isn't getting done at the rate of 5.6 million days per year.
We're talking with Patty O'Berry. She is the CEO and founder of Hands of a Friend and Genesis House. Patty, we are, after the break, going to be talking about the Me Too movement. So I just want to give people a heads up about that. But I think we want to wind up a few things here about your work. One of them is, and I asked you ahead of time if we could talk about this, but you had quite a health scare over the past year. Tell us a little bit about that, and then talk about how when an organization is so heavily identified with a person, which in this case would be you, what's a succession plan on this? And I'm sure you've had to have thought about that over the past year.
I actually began thinking about it. I'm 74 years old. I know. I only look 45. But yes. I actually am 74 years old. But I can outrun any 40-year-old, I promise you. A year ago, last month, I was diagnosed with 4 stages of cancer and immediately started treatment. But just prior to that, I had already began thinking, wow, you know, I'm 74. I'm not going to be able to hold this CEO position forever. And I began, I've had a bond with a woman who's so near like my personality for about the last decade. And I kept thinking, gosh, I wonder if she would be willing to step in and start learning my role in the event I should get hit by a semi truck, who knows, and be able to take over for me. And she eagerly said yes. And so fortunately enough, just before I was diagnosed, she had already come to that agreement. And I was diagnosed, as I said, with different stages of cancer. I am in remission. And she still is, we took her on full time. The plan is still in existence that she will inherit my position should that come sooner than I want. I'm not looking for that and don't plan on it and could probably run a marathon tomorrow. But, you know, as a CEO, you would not be a very smart business person if you didn't plan for your successor. And because she is not, she is in her very late 60s, we'll say. I'm flinching just a bit, Maddie. but we are also in the process of looking for that even younger person who can fill both our roles. And we think we've found her, and hopefully she will also join the team. And
okay.
And we won't be lagging.
Absolutely. And I've been to a couple of your events over the past year, and
yes.
I've known you for years, and you are extraordinarily well organized, and you know what direction you're going, and you haven't deviated. And I think that's been a strength of the organization from the very beginning. So we are talking to Patty O'Berry. She is CEO and founder of Hands of a Friend and Genesis House. We're going to take a quick break. If you'd like to join us on the Buckmaster Show live line and join the conversation, that is 790-2040. We'll be right back.
This is Bill Buckmaster. I love travel and flying from Tucson International Airport. And when you fly Tucson, you're standing up for Tucson. When more people fly Tucson, airlines respond with more flights. And with more flights, more travelers can get here to conduct important business. It's a win for the region, and it's a win for you in time saved and money saved not traveling to an airport 2 hours away. Travel smart and fly Tucson. Check out flytucson.com. The Regional Transportation Authority funds projects to help make our transportation system safe, reliable, and efficient. Improve regional mobility is important for economic vitality for businesses and families. The RTA continues to finance construction work for 6 new roadway projects scheduled in 2018. For more information on RTA projects, visit rtamobility.com. The RTA is delivering its promise to you.
Did you know that you can check out complete digital editions of popular magazines with your Pima County Public Library card? From Arizona Highways to Yoga Journal and everything in between, the library is your source for entertainment. Visit library.pima.gov and browse the e-library to start checking out your favorite magazines today. That's library.pima.gov.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Southern Arizona is home to one of the world's most trusted sources of information on medicines. The Credible Meds website is visited each day by over 2,000 people from more than 60 countries. You too can learn how to personalize your medications and take control of your health care. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and join Bill Buckmaster each month as he and Dr. Ray Woosley, founder of Credible Meds, give you practical tips on how to get the most from your medications.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show. Some exciting news from Green Things. Socalo Fine Mexican Imports is now located on the 13-acre Green Things site on River Road, just west of Bernie Fenton Park. Park, along with great Zocalo merchandise from Mexico and Latin America. Check out Green Things for all your gardening needs on the web at greenthingsaz.com. We are talking to Patty O'Berry, CEO and founder of Hands of a Friend in Genesis House. That's a domestic violence shelter that serves Southern Arizona. And as we were ramping up to this interview, I had asked Patty if she would talk a little bit about the Me Too movement. A lot of her work involves victims of sexual harassment as well as domestic violence. And Patty, you've looked into this.
I did. You know, when you asked me that question, I had my own personal views, and in a lot of ways, I was for the movement, obviously. That's some of the work I do. But I also was ambivalent about some of it, and I'd like to explain some of that. To begin with, you know, the Me Too movement is just the most recent in women's rights issues about their person or their bodies. It goes clear back to the caveman days.
Sure.
I mean, for crying out loud, when he was holding a club and the men were dragging their wives by the hair, point being, hashtag don't pull my hair, I guess. I guess they could have started their own movement, and that's what that would have been. But as early as the 1920s with the suffragettes, they fought the sexist fight for the right for women to vote, which was ratified August 20th of 1920. So hashtag we won and we're as smart as you men.
Okay. So the Me Too stretches way back, in a sense.
Me Too goes all the way back to the caveman era.
Sure.
You know, as far as this business with all these stars coming forward now with the Me Too movement and the Hollywood couch, Hollywood casting couches have been in existence for 100 years. It's nothing new. The Me Too movement, in fact, the Me Too movement is 100 years old. In 1921, one of the most famous Hollywood male stars was Fatty Arbuckle. He was tried for raping and then murdering a young starlet in 1921. And believe it or not, he was acquitted. But he did lose his career. I'll say that. You know, I almost want to say, why are they calling it the Me Too movement? Why aren't they calling it It's the About Time movement? 100 years. I mean, 100 years ago. Then we had Rosie the Riveter from the 1940s to 45. She fought to show that women could and would do the work of men and did become the first female defense workers replacing men during the war. Remember those days?
Absolutely.
Now these same women fight alongside men on the battlefield and ride the boats of submarines, which was just instituted about a year ago. Hashtag, we can work and fight like men too. Then we had the Woodstock era in 1969. You know, both male and female saw the lyrics, the gyrations of music artists, the freedom of dress and sex adopted by both sexes in abundance. You know, half of Woodstock was half nude. Hashtag Me Too and them also. Then we went to the bra burning era. Remember those days? I don't know if I was even wearing a bra then, but yeah, that was about my era. I guess I was. That was during the 60s and 70s era and through the Vietnam War. It started with the idea of women burning their bra in a sense of showing their desire to be 100% treated the same as men in all fields. And then it actually was taken over by Gloria Steinem, who turned it into the women's lib era. But it started as burning your bras.
Okay, so then we have this history of women not being happy with something.
Yes.
Doing something about it, and in most cases, seeing changes.
Well, very little changes, obviously, since we're still 100 years ago with the casting couch. And here we are still complaining about the casting couch.
Okay.
I mean, was nothing learned in 100 years?
Well, what are we learning now then about the Me Too movement? Again, you say you're ambivalent about it. You understand that the issue certainly exists, sexual harassment.
Yes.
But how about as far as the country's going about addressing it right now?
Honestly, truthfully, the best thing I've seen come of it is probably something that was a bit more unexpected to have come out, and that is all the young children, the gymnasts, the young children athletes whose parents thought they were doing right, putting their kids in these gymnastics classes, only to find out all these years later, And most of it coming out because the Me Too movement popped up so vocally. Most of those innocent children who were abused by the coaches, both male and female, has come out of that. But you know, this Me Too movement, what about Corey Feldman? What about the young actor Corey Feldman? He was a Me Too person 10, 12, 15 years ago. He was telling Hollywood this is what's going on, and nobody would believe him, and everybody trashed him, including his peers. So come on, it can't just be about Hollywood starlets.
So then bring it back to your organization. How do you deal with this? Is your board talking about it? Have you seen the current movement bring a little bit more boldness for women who have undergone some of the harassment? Or how are people kind of working through this now?
Well, this is the topic that I've discussed since I very first opened this shelter. You know, I was 4 years old when I was raped by a relative for an entire summer that I was given to for the summer. As well, I was sexually harassed by three bosses as a single mother, and I desperately needed my job. So what? Hashtag me too. You know, I've written many articles for the newspaper about the flagrant abuse of athletes, artists, politicians, etc., who rain terror on their wives, lovers, and their own children. You know, hashtag them too. We talk about it at shelter in various ways, partly because I know from personal experience that being sexually assaulted as a child sets you up to become a domestic violence victim. And so there's that side of the sexual assault as well.
But you say that the Me Too movement has a lot of power, but what I'm hearing is that we need to tread lightly in some areas.
Well,
where is this?
They need to be careful with some of the power they're reigning, because I don't think they expected that one of the very first accusers has now also been accused, female, by the way. I think her name is Aisha Argenda. Mm-hmm. I believe that's her name. And she herself has now been accused of the very same thing, of preying upon a 17-year-old who is a minor male and having sex with him when she was in her 30s. Is it proved? No. Can we say she's guilty? No. But until all of these who have been accused are found guilty, right now it's just a rampant Me Too. Everybody confess and tell as much as what's happened to them as they can. And yes, it helps.
Well, there's a certain degree of piling on that's going on, but is there value in the movement?
For me, I see the value in what I said before, Dan. I see the value in the young athletes who've been able to come forward. You know, most of these people in Hollywood have known by word of mouth this has been going on, I'll reiterate again, for 100 years. 100 years. Get a clue.
Right. And I know that you have been part of what you do is you go into court with a lot of women who are victims. A lot of them are, frankly, timid. Part of your job is to, frankly, embolden them. And
you can tell, I'm not the least bit timid.
No. But the Me Too movement now also claims that it is emboldening women to speak up, which is really the first step, because as you have said, and I know you've quoted it before, that it takes a woman 7 times leaving an abusive relationship before she stays out. So Me Too is, in a sense, emboldening women, but it's kind of an old story, too.
Exactly. Well, that, you know, I'm all for it. I'm all for if you have to start a new project like this, be it the Me Too or going all the way back to the caveman days and the Rosie the Riveter, as I've said, if you have to do it every 10 years, do it, but get a little more organized. You know, set up what you want to come of it.
Okay.
I don't see that we're, you know, other than, okay, well, we want to all talk about Harvey Weinstein and Kevin Spacey. And if you want to talk about any of them, the Bill Cosby one's the closest one to, he's admitted it in depositions. In his instance, most of these women that he invited to his place didn't really know what they were in for, so to say. He drugged those women before he had sex with
well,
them.
It's,
they were unconscious.
It's an interesting time. I want to make sure that we have a little bit of time here. October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month. You got a couple of things
yes,
going.
Yes, it is. We do have the Black and Blue No More Dinner, as I said, at the American Legion. That's the one on Duval Mine Road in Green Valley. It's $35 per person or $8. For a table of eight, it's $245. G-Man is going to be there with his karaoke and hula dancers, and our vocalist, Maddie Pascoe, will entertain us. It's an amazing event. Also, check us out on Facebook and our new website, handsofafriend.org. You'll see all of our events on there and many of these topics. And just a tidbit of what we're planning in the future, we are going to be doing podcasting, and we are going to be having a lot of YouTube forum videos up on our own YouTube site.
Okay, excellent. Thank you very much. That's Patty O'Berry with Hands of a Friend and Genesis House. I'll be back in this seat on Friday as we speak to Manny Valenzuela. He is the superintendent of the Sahuarita Unified School District, and there's a lot going on there. Bill has several of us sitting in for him during his vacation week. Don't forget to check out his photos on his Facebook page, and of course, all his shows are archived at buckmastershow.com. On behalf of the team here at the Buckmaster Show, you make it a great rest of your Monday.